Let me introduce Doug for those of you who don't know who he is. Dr. Faulkner is a master homeopath. He was certified by Vega Rosenberg's ESSH School of Homeopathy. And for those of you who don't know, I actually studied with Vega as well. He was my first homeopathy teacher. Doug was trained as an emergency physician and an instructor for hospital-based clinical emergency medicine. And Dr. Faulkner brings an extensive medical background to his understanding of health and disease. Dr. Faulkner started his first homeopathic training program in 2004, and he founded the Polaris Institute to train homeopathic practitioners. He maintains a worldwide client base while continuing to expand his teaching activities, and he currently resides with his family in the Oregon's Siskiyou Mountains. Doug's really a very gifted teacher and healer, and he combines conventional medical knowledge with a deep intrinsic grasp of the energetic and spiritual principles connected with successful homeopathic treatment. So he really combines the fundamentals of materia medica and repertory, case-taking, case analysis, and he really integrates this with his own personal life experiences and his own growth process. So I think we're very fortunate to have Dr. Faulkner join us today. Doug, why don't you just go ahead and start by telling us a little bit. I know you're starting this program very soon. Why don't you just start by telling us when the program's starting, what is the basic orientation of the program, just the basic logistical details so people know when it's starting and what the basic nature and scope of the program is.
Okay, sure. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you fine, Doug.
Okay, good. Tomorrow is the first class. This is pretty quick notice. What we're doing is a two-year program. The first year is going to help people who have no familiarity with homeopathy to get some of the fundamentals along with the general approach that I use. And the second year is going to be a more clinically oriented year. We're going to meet on a webinar basis, meaning it's going to be all from the comfort of your own home. We'll have screen sharing, so you'll be able to see on the screen anything that I want to present. And we'll be meeting for about 2 to 3 hours every 3 weeks. And that'll go on, as I said, for about 2 years. And I feel that what we'll be teaching is to give everybody a really strong foundation in both the tools of homeopathy as well as what I call my soul-based approach.
Fantastic. And Doug, since this is coming late notice and maybe some people will even be listening to the recording after the course has already started, can people join the course, like if they've missed the first few sessions, or how does that work?
Yeah, we'll be recording all the sessions, and if someone wants to join the class, they can certainly get recordings of sessions they've missed, and they can join in at any time in the first few months.
Fantastic.
It would still be appropriate.
Okay. And if people want more information, how would they go about getting that?
They can call my office at area code 541-552-1400, or they can go on my website, Polaris Institute, P-O-L-A-R-I-S, like the North Star, PolarisInstitute.com, and there's a page devoted to the school and the course, and there's a link to download a brochure.
Fantastic. So Doug, I'm curious. You know, you've got a medical background. You're an emergency physician. With that type of a background, how did you get involved in homeopathy?
Wow, that's a long time ago. What I have to say is that I've always been interested in integration, and I've always been interested in kind of like the bottom line of things and what the real underlying causes are. And I think when I was going through college and considering what kind of career I wanted to pursue, and I hit upon just an interest in medicine in general, I decided to take some anthropology classes, and I studied world medical traditions, and found, you know, such a variety of approaches to healing. And as many people out there probably know, traditional healing systems are almost all uniformly based in a spiritual aspect. And obviously homeopathy is rooted in spirituality as well. And I think having that perspective, when I got to traditional medical school and started training in the hospitals, and I saw so many shortcomings in a materialistic approach to healing, where you just looked at the body as a machine and completely ignored the fact that there was a life force operating in that system, I felt like it was really lacking in some of the, you know, the basic tools to help people not only get over an acute problem or alleviate symptoms, but it was, you know, it had no capacity to reverse disease, and people weren't really healing most of the time. At that point, I ran into a colleague of mine who was also an emergency physician, had dinner with him, and he said, you know, I treat my family with this. And he went upstairs and brought down his remedy kit, and he held it with such reverence. I just remember the smile on his face. It was as if he had taken something from an altar and presented it on the dining room table. I looked at these remedies sitting in these small bottles, and I said, well, what's that? And he smiled again. He says, well, this is what I use for my family. I don't tell many people about it because, you know, I'm in conventional medicine and they don't really understand what this is. But these little pellets have a kind of energetic potency contained in them, and when you give them to people appropriately, it helps them to heal. I went to the library right away and got some books describing homeopathy and speaking about the fundamental concepts. And I immediately recognized that that was what I wanted to do. It was as if my soul recognized I found my life path, and it was just downhill from there.
Amazing. And then, Doug, what kind of training? I mean, now you discovered this amazing thing called homeopathy, and you realize this is your life path. How did you go about actually studying and really learning how to apply this in real clinical practice?
Yeah, well, I did what a lot of people who are on the call and a lot of homeopaths today have done. They, you know, I started with some fundamental courses. The National Center gives a great 2-week course in the summer. They call it, you know, their summer school program. And then I started taking weekend seminars with various instructors that are known both worldwide and in the States. And after that, realized I needed a more focused course, and so I took Paul Herskew's year-and-a-half program and then Lou Klein's 2-year master clinician course. And at that point, I felt like I had a pretty good understanding and foundation in the basics and the concepts that, you know, Hahnemann describes in the Organon. And I began working with patients of my own, and it became clear to me after about a year of doing that my results weren't really up to par with what, you know, my own personal expectations were. And so I searched for, you know, more instruction and education, and I came across Vega Rosenberg School and ended up spending, I remember I was joking with a friend of mine, the two of us had spent 2 years with Lou Klein, and we had met at a seminar of Vega's and looked at each other and said, yeah, we definitely got to study with this guy. He really knows something that none of these other guys seem to be teaching. And we met the first day of class, and we said, well, we'll probably stick this out for about a year or so, and then we'll be ready. And 10 years later, we're both talking to each other. Remember when we said we'd be here for about a year? So I spent about 10 years studying with Vega, and I think he was probably the most influential teacher that I've had in homeopathy, largely because he really goes to the core of things. And in a lot of ways, he, you know, the influences he had on my training and my practice were revolutionary.
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree. I studied with Vega. Really, I hadn't been studying very long at all, just a couple of months, and then I started studying with him. But really, what I saw in terms of his ability to perceive into the case and see really the essence of what was going on, and I thought also his ability to describe the remedies was phenomenal. I mean, he could paint a picture of the inner working of the remedy that was, you know, so useful in actual clinical practice. So, yeah, I agree. He's a really phenomenal practitioner and has a lot to offer.
You know, I asked myself, you know, in the first few years, because I'm usually pretty adept at the things that I focus on. And when I went to medical school and trained in emergency medicine, it was a fairly natural thing for me to become competent at it and to excel in you know, the general discipline. When I did homeopathy and studied for those 4 years with, you know, those various teachers and learning various methods, what I found was that my results were lackluster at best. And this was discouraging because I couldn't imagine a future where what I found was the love of my life, which was homeopathy, that my results were going to be, you know, 10-20% success rate. That just wasn't satisfactory for me. And I was a little frustrated because I couldn't understand what was missing. I had read a lot of Materia Medica. I was understanding how to use the repertory. I certainly knew how to take a case. I got lots of information from, you know, almost every case that I took. And I usually spent hours trying to analyze the case and work it through. And I kept coming up with remedies that looked okay, but in the long run, the results didn't hold or they didn't occur at all. And I just didn't know what was missing. And so when you mentioned how Vega really could describe remedies and really see to the core, I began to think that the issue wasn't so much methodology and it wasn't so much you know, how much information a person could master. It was really what Hahnemann, you know, describes early on in the Organon, to develop a capacity to see clearly, to have an unprejudiced view of things. And not only was that a concept that I thought needed more development and more focus in my own training, but it also became clear to me that unless you had a higher vision yourself, unless you attained a degree of awareness and perception that was beyond the patient in front of you, you wouldn't be able to help them, at least not with homeopathy.
I love what you're saying, Doug. It's so much in the spirit of Hahnemann's Medical Observer article, where he essentially says the same thing, that, you know, the key really is being unprejudiced, being able to perceive what's going on, being able to work on yourself to the degree where you overcome your own biases and prejudices and can really clearly perceive what's in front of you. So I have to say it's fantastic what you're communicating here. It's really, really excellent.
Yeah. I want to relate a story about that because it was amazing me when I first started studying with Vega and began witnessing, you know, firsthand how someone who has a really deep perception can operate. And, you know, we're all taught that, you know, you have to take a complete case. And I don't remember who said it. I thought it was Kent, but maybe it was someone else. You know, a case well taken was a case half cured.
Right, right.
And so what I saw in Vega's class was that people who were seasoned in the methodology, not really methodology, but seasoned in the capacity to see clearly, it wasn't so difficult to solve a case most of the time. You know, we're taught, you know, you need to spend an hour and a half with a patient or 2 hours laboriously collecting information about every aspect of the person, you know, from the food cravings to the sleep positions to, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And while all those things are important to know and understand, without the clarity of perception, we miss the fact that once the pattern is clear, once we understand what, as Hahnemann says in paragraph 3, what needs to be cured in a case, once we clearly perceive that, it's not so hard to match a remedy to that. And it's also not so hard to find a remedy that matches that. There was a woman in the class who had no homeopathy training whatsoever. And I remember a case came in, and she was sitting next to me, and she leaned over and said, "Could you find that symptom in the repertory for me because I don't really know how to use it?" And then a few minutes later she said, "Could you look up this symptom for me and could you repertorize those two symptoms and tell me what remedies come up?" She knew enough about the process, you know, of repertorization and then selecting remedies in Materia Medica, but she didn't really know how to use the tools. And I looked those up for her. I got a list of remedies. And she said, "So tell me the remedies." And she wrote them down. And then she picked up, I think it was Murphy's Materia Medica. And she started reading those remedies one at a time. And when she came to the sixth remedy in the list, and I think there were about 12, she says, "This is it. This is the remedy." I said, "How'd you know?" She says, "Well, this matches exactly what I'm seeing here." And again, this was a woman who had no homeopathic training, had never taken a case in her life. And what she did have was the gift of clear perception. And, you know, when the case was done and Vega was going around the room saying, what remedies do you think this, which remedies come to mind, asking all the students, she raised her hand and she said, this is the remedy I think it is. And he says, absolutely right. And it was the remedy. I remember that person came back and follow up, you know, weeks later, and clearly the remedy had worked and was working and continued to work over the time that patient, you know, came back to our clinic. So what was astounding there was that, you know, we all think that there's so many methods we need to master and there's so much material we need to know. And in some ways it's intimidating to people because, you know, it sounds like you've got to spend about 10, 15 years, you know, reading these books and gathering a mastery over or a facility with these tools. And really what you need most of all is this clear perception.
That's a great story, and it really demonstrates the central place that perception has and, you know, really how that's the most important quality to develop as a practitioner. So, yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. I wanted to ask you one of those desert island-type questions. So, you know, just so that people get a sense of what's important for you in homeopathy, what your orientation is, if you were going to suggest a few books, 2, 3, 4 books that you would say are the ones which are most important for the students taking your course and people studying with you to focus on, what would you say those particular works would be, the ones that are most seminal and most central to what we do?
Yeah, well, hand in hand, you know, obviously you have to have the Organon, and I think I told you in the last interview that it's amazing to me how many schools are out there today in homeopathy that don't use the Organon at all.
Mm.
You know, if I was on a deserted island, you know, and stuck there, I'd also want a book of how to make chocolate out of sand, specifically homeopathy. I would definitely recommend Kent's lectures, and I think Borky's Materia Medica.
Philosophy lectures, is that the one you're referring to, or the Materia Medica?
Yeah, Kent's lectures on philosophy.
Philosophy, okay, yeah.
And, you know, I found his lectures on Materia Medica to be quite difficult.
Mm.
You know, there's definitely some, you know, great value to it, but you know, the remedies in that work seem to blend together too much for me.
Mm-hmm.
He had so much detail.
Mm. You know, the way that those books were produced is Kent was lecturing in Philadelphia, and he'd literally be reading from Herring's Guiding Symptoms. He'd read one symptom after another, and then when he would get to a symptom that he'd actually seen in his practice, he'd describe the picture of what he's seen. So what I tell my students, and I agree with you totally, Doug, that if you just read through Kent's lectures, it becomes very overwhelming, a lot of detailed information. So what I tell students is skip all those little symptoms and just read the clinical descriptions. And if you do that, I think it's a little bit easier to get through that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's fine. So the reason I picked these books is because they're very... they seem to be real clean and pure, meaning that they don't seem to have a lot of added bias.
Mm.
You know, you sort of get the bottom line, you sort of get the straight shot, and they're not trying to color it with personal opinion or you know, schemas that they've invented or created. And so it seems like a real pared-down, very rich, and in very few words, very, you know, deep and broad application. The other book I would take along with me would be James Allen, As a Man Thinketh.
Hmm.
And this is not a text for homeopathy. This is a text that helps you to understand how to discipline your thoughts and how to use your mind in a way that will further you along the direction you want to go. And it's a beautiful work. It's about a 40 or 50 page book. And the guy was just was enlightened, and I think he sat, you know, sort of like Moses and Jesus on a mountaintop and meditated and then wrote the book, and then after he finished it, I think he died shortly thereafter.
Wow.
He came on a mission to bring, you know, some words of wisdom to the world and then left the world. And it's just beautiful. It's poetic, it's rich, and it's it's kind of like, you know, what we're hearing about in, you know, works like The Secret, the movie The Secret, or, you know, What the Bleep Do We Know. There's sort of a quantum physics feel to it. And, you know, thoughts are, you know, in the thinking of a book like this, thoughts are not, you know, they're energetic things. They have effects. They attract things. And I think, you know, if we think more deeply about, you know, the human organism and the system that we are as living beings, our thoughts are very instrumental in the course of our health, our degree of health and well-being. And so I think this book is a really great guide for helping us to be clear and stay clear and to, you know, weed out the garden of our inner world so that we're a little bit more aligned and connected to our basic nature.
Doug, can you spell the last author's last name just so the people have it, they can find the book?
Yeah, it's James Allen, A-L-L-E-N.
A-L-L-E-N. Okay, so like the Allens in homeopathy, basically.
Yeah, so maybe he's a cousin of some of the homies.
Okay, great.
That we know. And there's a five volume set of his works, and Adamantinkus is the first of the five, and it's called The Wisdom of James Allen.
Fantastic. Okay, great. Doug, you know, these days there's this plethora of different methodologies and approaches. I mean, there seems to be as many different approaches as there are famous homeopaths out there. And so I'm just curious, how do you see what you're doing as different from, you know, any of a number of myriad different approaches which are being offered to the community?
Yep, it's a great question. I thought a lot about it. I was collecting methods in my early training. They all seem very appealing. Some of them are pretty sexy and enticing. And what I found over the years is that, you know, methods could be considered tools that I could put in my toolbox. And each method has, you know, some strengths and some weaknesses. But until you have what we were talking about earlier, a very strong foundation in the basics, until you understand, you know, what the principles of homeopathy are aiming at, any method that you pick up is going to be, in some ways, somewhat, I won't say dangerous, but unreliable, because the method kind of carries a momentum of its own and takes you into pathways that lead you to things that don't necessarily have application. I'll give you an example. I remember when I was, you know, just starting to study some of the Jan Scholten method, which is using the periodic table and extrapolating remedies based on their position in the periodic table. And I think this guy is, you know, an incredible genius, and I don't know, you know, how good of a homeopath most of the teachers are, you know, who teach various methods. I'm assuming just from listening to him that he has a lot of clinical experience, and I don't doubt the results that he, you know, he shows and reports, you know, in his lectures. But as a student of his method, I was able to understand the methodology. I would take it back to the clinic. I would come up with remedies based on what he taught, and they wouldn't work. And what I realized over time was that in order to be a master at something, you have to go the whole way through. You have to start from the beginning and go to the end. Just like a spiritual path, if you start picking and choosing and don't stay within the constructs of a specific system, then you're not getting the full development that's possible and is being offered by a given teaching. And so a lot of people short-circuit or bypass the development of a full and broad understanding of the discipline by collecting methods. So they have a toolbox that's full of different tools, and they don't really have the wherewithal to know how to utilize the tools in an effective way, and they don't even know necessarily that they don't know that. I would liken it to something I witnessed years ago. There was a Japanese shoji screen maker. He was a master craftsman, and he demonstrated his tools and the production of a shoji screen to an audience in about a three-hour period of time. And in the first hour, he described three of his tools, and that would be a chisel, a kind of a hammer, and his workbench, which was a narrow beam about 4 inches wide that had a dowel at the end as a stop where you could, you know, rest the wood that you were working on. And he just spent, you know, and went into elaborate detail, a description of how the tools were made, how they were constructed, how they functioned, how various parts of the tool related to other parts of the tool. And it was fascinating that you could talk about a chisel or a hammer and spend, you know, half hour on each and captivate an audience. And meanwhile, he's constructing this shoji screen, which by the end of the talk was, you know, constructed perfectly and was beautiful and aesthetic and balanced and something you'd want to buy and put in your own home. But what he said was that as a student and as an apprentice, he spent many years wanting to use the tools and wanting to start working with wood and creating shoji screens of his own. But what he ended up having to do were menial tasks. He'd have to run to the local corner store and buy a box of cigarettes for his teacher. He'd have to buy some materials to make glue or, you know, whatever it was. It was almost like the Karate Kid. I don't know if you've seen that movie where this young boy is apprenticing the instructor, and instead of learning karate, he's waxing cars and painting fences. And little does he know that those movements and that training are going to translate into incredible blocks and defense movements, you know, in actual karate. And the same with this apprentice, which he was learning all kinds of things that were preparing him to use the tools, but he wasn't really ready yet to use the tools, and his teachers were waiting until that time, and at that point they would present him with some tools and then he'd get on with the work of creating shoji screens. And I think homeopathy is analogous. It's such a deep discipline. It's such a deep science. There's so much to learn about what Hahnemann calls the spiritual principles of healing. It's an energetic spiritual science. It's not a physical science per se, and we have to learn what rules and principles operate in that realm, not only in our patients, but in ourselves. And until we start to polish and refine that capacity, all the tools that we might collect will really just, probably create more confusion than solve problems.
Doug, I know you refer to what you're describing now as soul-based homeopathy. Can you, for the benefit of the audience, can you clarify a little bit by exactly what you mean by soul-based homeopathy?
Absolutely. Let's see. You know, the way I see homeopathy and the way I see healing is that we all come into this plane of existence, which we call the Earth, this physical dimension, in physical bodies. But as beings, we are living souls. And as we go through life, the more we are in alignment with our soul nature, the more well-being and the more health that we have. And the more we are out of alignment with that, the more, quote, disease symptoms that we'll see. Now, I think on some level, disease is really an illusion. It doesn't really exist because as we understand from sacred, you know, traditions, mostly religious traditions, the soul is a pure thing. It comes in pure, whole, complete, and healthy. And so what I see is that, you know, we're taught, for example, that the vital force is the energetic principle or the spiritual principle in the body, which strives to restore health and balance, what the, you know, conventional medical world calls homeostasis. And if, for example, you sustain an injury, you'll see that in the area of the injury there might be inflammation, there might be swelling, redness, pain, that kind of thing. and we'll say, well, the conventional materialistic approach would look at that and say that's an illness or a disease. You have a contusion on your skin, or you have a bruise. And what a homeopath would say is that it's the vital force responding to that particular injury that is creating the symptoms. And so the symptoms themselves is not disease at all. It's actually a healing mechanism. It's actually part of the defense mechanism of the life force creating what we're calling disease. And actually it's a sign of health that your body's responding that way. If you were lying on the street dead and someone, inflicted the same injury, there would be no response. You wouldn't see redness, swelling, or pain, because the dead body has no vitality to respond. And analogously, all the disease symptoms that we experience on any level is really not the disease at all. It's the life force defending against something that's imbalancing us, something that is causing us to react. And that cause can be external, as in mechanical things, and it can. And most of the time, it's an energetic thing. It's an internal thing. And it becomes a subject of speculation what the nature of those internal things are. I know in the Oregon, and Hahnemann spends a lot of time talking about inimical forces to life. And what, in my view, when we're talking about soul-based, I think what's happening is the soul comes in, and it's really here to learn and gather experiences. And the nature of the soul is to always expand, to grow, to increase, to refine, and in each lifetime, if we have other lifetimes, and in this one for sure, the soul is here to have experiences to enrich itself. And the obstacles and the limitations that arise are really ways of the system giving the soul feedback so the soul can advance. And so the way I see soul-based homeopathy is that we look at each person as not really sick at all, but actually whole, complete, and well in their true nature, and that we're using remedies to help a person realign with that nature. So the remedies trigger a healing, they assist the vital force in the healing response that's already taking place, in the direction the system's already going, because the system is striving to advance and to evolve.
Very interesting. Doug, I noticed here that in the title of your course, you write that you teach how to enhance and refine one's inner guidance system. Can you clarify what exactly you mean by that? And also, how did you come up with this particular way of teaching and educating students in homeopathy?
All right, well, that goes back to some of the things we were talking about earlier, which is that, if you just take homeopathy. We'll get at the inner guidance system through this. If you just take, homeopathy as a body of information that you're trying to master, you can spend a lot of years studying the text and accumulate a lot of information. What will happen when you try to apply it is what many people out there experience, which is that they're not really sure why they can't get, consistent results. The inner guidance system is really, in my view, a function of the deepest part of our being. It's, some people call it intuition. It's the perception and the connection that happens when I'm fully integrated and aligned with my true nature and my soul nature. And when I'm in that state, I'm functioning in a way where, because everything is energy and because everything in the universe is connected, if I'm truly aligned with my true nature, then I'm connected to the nature of myself and the life around me, and things become much clearer. We know from homeopathy that based on the law of similars, that like things attract. And this is the nature, one of the fundamental spiritual principles of life, which is that if I'm in the energetics of my soul nature, then I'm attracting what my true being is made of and what it's signaling to the universe or to the world around me. And in that state of being, life brings me what I need. Now, of course, life always brings us what we need, because even in a state of disease, we're signaling to the world around us to give us experiences so that we can overcome them and advance ourselves and to grow. And from that new state, we have more depth and more, more understanding, and it just keeps moving that way. It's kind of an ongoing circle. So to refine and enhance the inner guidance system, it actually requires all of us to get more self-knowledge, to become more aware of the things working in our own being which are both aligned with our truth and the things which are out of alignment and are needing to be identified and to be shifted out of the center and bring us ourselves back into alignment with who we really are.
Interesting. You know, Doug, today, we talked about this a little bit earlier, there's all these different methods out there, and, you know, pretty much the head of every method claims that, you know, they're getting these amazingly fantastic results, and then, of course, you've got methods which are saying opposite things or diametrically opposing opinions, and, you know, so there's a lot of interesting complexity in what's going on there. But for me personally, you know, the bottom line really with any approach to homeopathy is the type of results we're getting, the quality of the improvement in the quality of our patients' lives is the real key, as Hahnemann says in Aphorism 1. That's why we do all this. So in your way of practicing homeopathy, how do you assess that your patients are actually getting better? What are the criteria that you look at that allow you to determine that the remedy prescription was correct and then the person is actually improving?
That's a great question. You know, I noticed many times when I was first treating patients that I would give a remedy, they'd come back at the first follow-up and they'd be all smiles and they were so pleased with, you know, the response they'd gotten, and I was amazed at how much better they were, and they were amazed. And after about 3 or 6 months, a lot of times those very same people would come back and the remedy had stopped working, and often they were back to square one. And I was really puzzled by this because, you know, I had heard in a lot of the courses I was taking that when you give the similimum or the best remedy, the remedy that matches the closest to what the person really needs, then you will see miraculous changes. And I thought, well, I'm seeing these miraculous changes and they're not sustainable. And I didn't quite understand that. So what I found over the years of looking at that was that, analogous to what we've seen, for example, in the real estate bubbles and the dot-com bubbles, often when you give a remedy and it creates a reaction that temporarily alleviates symptoms, it can look like a true cure has been initiated and is evolving. But because of natural healing principles, it's not really logical that a person can, say, for example, carry an illness for 10, 20 years or develop into an illness over a long period of time, and then in a very, very short period of time overcome that. It doesn't really fit, you know, the nature of things as we see them in general. And so what I found is a lot of times those remedies were actually not similimums. They were partial remedies, or they were remedies that fit aspects of the case and very powerfully affected the case temporarily but weren't sustainable in the long run. So when I look at a case, I'm actually looking for something that is not only sustainable in the long run, but little by little achieves the ultimate goal of helping that person to align themselves back with their true nature. And when that happens, what it looks like after a year or two or three is they recognize that they are a very different person from the person who came to the, you know, consultation room initially in the beginning. Their sense of themselves has changed. Their relationships have changed. The way that they interact with life has changed. And the way that life flows for them has changed. Oftentimes people will, you know, find that they're no longer relating to the same group of friends, that the career that they have doesn't suit them anymore, that, you know, their marriage has to shift a lot. There's so many deep fundamental changes that happen as people heal, and of course I'm not saying that people always change their friends or, you know, have trouble in their family life as they evolve. But as you become more aligned, what really is no longer aligned with who you are will fall away in your life. And so, you know, a lot of times the basis for my assessment of a remedy and is it working or is it not working, of course, if the disease symptoms go away, that's a great sign. Of course, if chronic illness, which required medication or required some kind of, you know, supplementation from the outside is now, you know, has completely disappeared, these are all good confirmatory signs. But I also look to make sure that that person has shifted in the very nature and core of their being. Because if symptoms go away, but the person feels the same to me and sort of looks the same as a person, as a whole person, I don't feel that the remedy has gone deep enough.
Interesting. So I just want to reiterate, if you have a patient that comes in, they've got asthma, for example, as their primary complaint, and you prescribe a remedy, and the asthma is essentially cured, but you look at the case and you see that the rest of their life doesn't seem to be working for them. Their marriage is unhappy, their work, they're unhappy in their work, they don't feel any type of, you know, spiritual connection, then you might actually decide that remedy is not a good prescription and look for actually a different remedy?
Obviously this is a complex question.
Yeah, I'm just curious.
But I think in a general sense, I would say yes. I would question very, very much and very hard whether this really was the best remedy for the person. I remember a case I saw not too long ago. She came to me telling me that she had two issues. She had chronic headaches and she had a lot of anxiety. She had seen a homeopath who had given her a remedy which had completely taken away the anxiety which she had had for her entire life. And she was very happy with that. And when I took the case, I didn't feel that the remedy she had taken matched in any way, shape, or form the nature of her case. But it had clearly done something beneficial for her. And so she said, well, I don't want to lose the benefits of that remedy, you know, for the sake of the remedy you're going to give me. And what I realized was the remedy I was giving her also covered the anxiety that she had had in the past, but it went deeper than just that. And since she took that remedy, you know, she found that her whole life was changing in the ways that I just described. Her relationship to work, she was shifting there. Her relationships were shifting. There were a lot of things that she hadn't even told me about were changing in her life. And so having, you know, one aspect of a case go away is very gratifying to anyone, especially something like asthma, which could be a lifelong chronic pattern. But to me, it's not enough to say that, you know, this case has gotten the most that homeopathy has to offer. And because I view all of us as souls working through our lives to become, you know, more and more of what we truly are, I feel that homeopathy, being a spiritual science that addresses the soul nature and can has the tools to provide, you know, a benefit to that, that, you know, the highest form of cure that we can offer is finding a remedy that matches that deepest level. So I'm always looking for that. And, you know, I've seen the opposite happen where, you know, the person came because they had asthma, and I'm glad you mentioned asthma because it reminds me of this case. And she went through a cycle of probably three or four remedies over time, probably over about 8 years' time. And each remedy, I felt, worked very deeply for her. She was really progressing in her life in very profound ways. And in each case of getting a new remedy, and each remedy she was probably using for anywhere from 1 to 3 years, in each case the asthma wasn't touched. And by the end of probably the sixth or seventh year, a new remedy came up, and that remedy completely addressed the asthma. Or I shouldn't say addressed the asthma. That remedy stimulated response in her system, which finally addressed the asthma. And the asthma went away completely. And so what's beautiful about that example is that, first of all, this idea that there's one remedy that's going to magically solve every problem and aspect of that person to the core of their being is probably not an accurate model. And the second thing is that a remedy that acts very, very profoundly in one aspect of a case isn't necessarily the deepest remedy. And so unless you have a broader vision of where you're trying to bring a person in the long run, it's really hard to assess your cases. Because you can say, well, I had all the success. Look at this case. This person's asthma went away, but their life is still really disastrous. Or another person, their life is getting better and better and better on every level, but their, quote, disease symptoms, the identified chief complaint is still there. And what does that mean? And so I think if you don't have a broader view, if you don't understand that, you know, in my school, what I'm teaching is that we're trying to aim at the deepest level, and we're trying to restore alignment to the core of our being, then you have a reference point that you can use to assess your cases. And that reference point, in my mind, is kind of the most fundamental reference point. Because, you know, just like Stephen Hawking, he's a scientist who is completely crippled by ALS, so he can't move his body at all. And yet he's, you know, created incredible works in his field in that condition. And so we see that the success of his being able to express the being that he is in life has not been, it's certainly been limited by his physical body, but it has not been limited to the point that he can't express that. And so I think if we look and say, has he been successful in life, we will say, you know, he's absolutely been successful. And his degree of well-being and functioning is very high in spite of the fact that his body's crippled. And so we get a reference point there where we see that this is a man who has achieved a great deal and his life has really worked for him in spite of an incredibly, you know, awful physical situation. And again, it gives us a reference point that's different from maybe the mainstream medical world where they're saying, you know, he's very ill, he's got a terrible disease. And I think, no, he's very well with a very significant physical impediment.
I really like this a lot. I like the whole orientation of your approach. I'm curious, though, Doug. I mean, I can see how you help your students to, you know, develop their guidance system to really perceive clearly, to be unprejudiced and unbiased. In terms of the practical aspects of homeopathic practice, the fundamentals, does your program address those things? And if so, how does it do that?
Yeah. Well, you know, one thing I don't think I was very clear about earlier when I answered your question is how in my class do we actually help people to refine themselves? And, you know, one of the things that I'm going to be doing in this course that's coming up is setting some ground rules for the students. Number one is that it's not a kind of course where, you know, I feed information and everyone writes it down and they learn it and they go off and you know, do some homework and then come back for some more. It's a very interactive, participatory framework. And part of what we're going to do is work together as kind of a think tank or mastermind group where all of our energies are going to come together to support all of us to grow as people and to be willing to expose ourselves, to be vulnerable to a certain degree. Because if we don't allow our stuff to come up and if we don't allow ourselves to work on our stuff as we go through the process of learning homeopathy, we're not going to refine that capacity to see clearly. If we bring in a prejudice that we're not willing to address, if we're not willing to see it, if we're not willing to, you know, be honest with ourselves, then we're going to carry that prejudice along, and every case that requires us to be clear along those lines is going to be invisible to us because our prejudice is going to overwhelm our perception. So in that sense, you know, what I do in the class is going to be very interactive, and people are going to have to be willing on one level or another, depending on their own motivation, to get clear, to be willing to be seen, to be exposed, and to work on those things which need to be shifted so that, you know, clarity can come. That being said, rather than, you know, taking, say, learning how to use the repertory as a body of information that's divorced from who we are, we're going to be learning how to very selectively use the repertory as it applies to what we're seeing in a case. because if you learn the repertory, you know, from a rote standpoint, you know what's in it, you know a bunch of information in your head, and then you have a case in front of you, and a symptom comes up, and you say, well, I know that symptom, I know where to find it. Then we get distracted because it feels so easy and natural to go where we're familiar and where we're comfortable. And so that old adage, if I'm a hammer, then everything that I'm going to, you know, look at looks like a nail. If I'm a surgeon, then every problem looks like a surgical case. And if I learn a lot of materia medica and a lot of repertory, and am not discriminating about the information I'm receiving, then everything that clicks with something I already know tends to push me to look at what I already know rather than to question what is it that I'm seeing and how do I use what I'm seeing as an integrated whole so that I can use the information according to clear perception, not according to what's comfortable and familiar. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's great. I'd like to give people an opportunity to ask some questions as well, but before I do that, just one more question. Just to sum it up, can you just quickly just tell us what do you think the benefits of taking your course are, what students can expect if they attend, and also who should take the course? I mean, is this for advanced practitioners, beginning students? What level is appropriate?
Second question first. Anyone who's interested in the ideas that I'm talking about today, I think my course would be appropriate for. Although there'll be some redundancy if you've had a lot of, you know, training in repertory and materia medica, you may find that, you know, certain parts of the course will be information that you know, but that will not be the bulk of the course because I'm not spending a lot of time focusing on you know, all the ins and outs of the repertory or focusing on all the intricacies of a broad range of materia medica, because I think everybody knows how to learn this stuff once you give people the basic structure of things. You know, you can go to your own books and read materia medica on your own. You don't need to have it, you know, presented over and over again in class. I will probably, you know, focus more on how you would approach materia medica along the lines of soul-based learning. How do you look at a remedy and get the essence of it, and how do you relate it to what, you know, what's the core of a remedy? Vega Rosenberg talked about the essence of a remedy, and I'm not going to be teaching his essences per se or somebody else's model or picture of remedies, but I'm going to be talking about how, you know, you can use the repertory and use the materia medica, but always guided by the bigger vision of what, you know, what we're trying to cure. And so in that sense, it's more like what the Organon is actually teaching, I think, as a basic foundation. So any level can come. I'm thinking that mostly I'll be working with beginners and intermediate students, but I wouldn't say that would preclude advanced people from attending. I forgot your other question.
Just what could people hope to get from the course over a period of a year or two?
Yeah, so I think what people will get from the course ultimately will be an understanding of what it takes to go further. There are a lot of people out there I know are very frustrated because they've spent years and years and years and they keep going to more and more seminars, and the bottom line is that their results don't change much. And again, it's because we gather tools, but we don't necessarily know where the tools fit in the bigger scheme. So I think once we get people oriented to what the essence is of what Hahnemann is saying in the Organon, which is how do I refine myself as the primary tool, as the primary method, because in a sense, I don't have a method. There isn't a system of, you know, gathering information, for example. There's only a method of bringing you back to, you know, the core of yourself so that you can have clear, and it's a relative thing, it's an ongoing thing. The deeper you go inside, the deeper, the more refined your consciousness, the more refined your awareness, the more refined your understanding, then the clearer you'll be in a case and the more you'll be able to help a person. And so I think when you get a feel of that, then you'll have a direction and you'll know how to advance yourself further as you go through, you know, your own life and your own experiences in homeopathy and outside of homeopathy. I was thinking the other day, can you be a good homeopath if you yourself are stuck in so many ways in your own life? You know, how does that affect your capacity to help people heal and to find good remedies? And I think it has a tremendous impact. If you have a bad marriage, if you're not able to have good relationships, if you can't succeed in your work, if nothing is really flowing in your own life, I don't think no matter how much information you have and no matter how good you are at putting that information together, when you do a case, you're not going to see what needs to be cured.
Fantastic. All right, well, I'm going to go ahead, Doug, and open up the lines and let some other people ask some questions. Just really quickly, though, the phone number and the website where people can get more information again?
You can call me at the office, 541-552-1400. And the website is polarisinstitute.com, polarisinstitute.com.
Great, thanks. All right, let me open up. So does anybody have a question for Dr. Faulkner?
Yes, this is Jeff in San Diego.
Hey, Jeff.
Hi. Hey, early on in the call, I've really enjoyed also, just to let you know, I've really enjoyed the call.
Great. Thank you.
I wanted to ask a question, though. Early on in the call, you were mentioning that you didn't, or it seemed to me that you said that you didn't think, or I should say you thought homeopathy was a spiritual science as opposed to a physical science. Now, is that correct, and or would you differentiate between the two?
I would definitely differentiate between the two. Can you ask a little bit more? I'm not...
Hold on. I muted the line back because there was a lot of background noise, so let me hold on one second. Go ahead, Jeff.
Okay, it sounded to me like you were saying that homeopathy wasn't so much as it was a spiritual science. That's what I wanted to understand. And
yeah, I definitely think it's unquestionable that homeopathy is a spiritual science and not a physical science. There are many paragraphs in the Organon itself where Hahnemann goes into great detail and goes to great lengths to exhort students of homeopathy not to stray into what he calls a materialistic stamp, you know, to look at things as if, you know, we're dealing with material things, because first of all, our remedies are clearly non-material. If you take a homeopathic remedy and analyze it in any lab, there's no material substance in it at all. And even by mathematics, it goes beyond Avogadro's number. And so it seems only logical that if our remedies are active and actually producing results and they have no material in them, it must be some energetic principle. And if an energetic principle is what's in operation, it makes sense, to at least to my mind, that our system of healing has something to do with the energetics or spiritual aspects of life and not physical.
Great.
Does that answer your question, Jeff?
Yes.
Great, thanks. Good question, good answer. Other questions for Dr. Faulkner?
Tim, what is the name of the teacher he was studying? Vega, V-E-G-A?
Yes, it's Vega Rosenberg.
Rosenberg,
yes. He was actually my first homeopathy teacher as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Other questions for Dr. Faulkner? We've got about a minute left.
I have a quick question.
Sure, go ahead.
So you mentioned that previously you had done all these methods and you got kind of a 10 to 20% success rate. And now, given your definition of success, which is a deeper evolution of the person over time, what would you say your success rate is?
I would say, just looking at my caseload, that probably above 85 to 90% are following along the lines of what I expect to see. So I would say, you know, realistically, 85, 90% of the time I'm finding remedies that are going very deep and are working, you know, for long periods of time and shifting things very profoundly.
Mm. And you're also including the curing of, like, serious chronic disease in that as well?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, good.
Absolutely. The vast majority of people I work with, I mean, I wouldn't be satisfied if those things didn't go away.
Yeah.
But my measure or my my perspective is still based in this bigger outlook.
Fantastic.
But I'm also a very bottom line person, and so, you know, as airy fairy as it sounds to have people realign with their soul and all that, it sounds really nice. You know, on the ground, what I care most about is that people get the results they're looking for, and it would be, in my view, kind of a non-productive activity if people weren't getting what, you know, conventional science says is true cures of conventional disease diagnoses, or what modern medicine calls disease entities.
Well, on that word, we're going to see we're at the hour. Oh, Dr. Faulkner, a very big North American thank you for taking his time on a Saturday morning to join and share.
Thank you.
Thanks,
have a great day.
Good night, everybody. I mean, good morning, everybody. Have a good rest of the weekend.